This is Day to Day. I'm Alex Chadwick. It's going to be June before the former boss of the bankrupt telecommunications company WorldCom, he's Bernard Ebbers, before he learns what his sentence will be for the biggest corporate fraud in U.S. history. He was convicted yesterday. A daunting outcome, perhaps, for other now infamous former executives also on trial or about to be. Kurt Eichenwald is a reporter for the New York Times and author of the book Conspiracy of Fools, A True Story. It's about the Enron Corporation. He spoke earlier with Madeline Brandt.
Kurt Eichenwald, welcome to Day to Day.
Thank you for having me.
Now, the Bernie Ebbers verdict was a big victory for the government. How do you think it'll figure in the government's upcoming cases against CEOs?
The biggest thing it's going to do is really going to change the calculations for the future defendants. I mean, largely all of the defendants, Jeff Skilling, Ken Lay, and even people who are currently on trial, Kozlowski and Scrushy from HealthSouth, Kozlowski from Tyco, the other two from Enron, all of them are relying on some level under the defense of, I didn't know what my underlings were doing or what I did was approved. There's not a lot of alternate evidence showing that they didn't know, and there's not a lot of evidence showing that other people approved. And so at the end of the day, you're left with people's credibility. There has been the question of whether or not a jury is going to feel comfortable going up to the chief executive level with a very thin evidentiary trail. The Ebbers case shows that a jury is in fact willing to hold the chief executive accountable based on logic and intuition.
Well, I wonder if there's some feeling now in corporate America that, hey, this is really not fair because here we are running multinational corporations that straddle borders and countries. How can we possibly know every single detail of what's going on in these companies?
Well, that is, see, that's the interesting thing. That is what comes up in a number of these cases. That's what's going to come up in the Enron case in particular. In that case, you're dealing with income manipulations of $90 million here, $130 million there. With the Ebbers case, what made it so much more significant, so much more powerful, I would rather say, in the evidence against the chief executive, is ultimately it's very hard for a chief executive who has been spending a decade celebrating himself as the visionary leader who has brought this company to, you know, WorldCom, to the position that it's in, to then turn around and say, you know, I looked at all the numbers, but I didn't see that $11 billion. I didn't understand it. It didn't mean anything to me. The jury is going to have an enormous problem with that. But on the other side, you know, is that fair? I do think that's fair. When you get down to smaller numbers, $50 million, $12 million, $120 million, which is the kind of numbers you're going to see in the Enron case, is the jury going to be equally able to have the logical conclusion? I think that one is going to be tougher unless there is much more direct evidence of the type that we did not see in the Ebbers case.
Plus, in the 90s, you had many of these executives bragging that they, in fact, were the geniuses who created these high-flying companies and, in fact, deserved their enormous compensation. So it seems a little difficult that they're trying to have it both ways now.
Yeah, well, it is this thing of be careful about flying too close to the sun. In the 90s, executives were holding themselves up as worthy of compensation that rivaled the GNP of some small countries. And the only reason that they had such great deserving is this company wouldn't be what it is today but for my brilliance and leadership. And now when we turn around and say, well, in fact, the company was riddled with fraud, the company's finances were not being reported correctly, and ultimately the company was, you know, its portrayed performance was a sham, which is what you see in HealthSouth, which is what you see with Enron. It's very difficult for a chief executive to turn around and say, I knew absolutely nothing, but I was deserving of what I was compensated. You are kind of straddling two fences. In the end of the day, it's funny, I think the world tends to believe that the Enron case is going to be the easiest. The Enron case, I think, is going to be the toughest. The HealthSouth case involving Richard Scrushy is a stronger evidentiary case than Enron. And WorldCom, with Mr. Ebbers, was the one that was fairly thin on direct evidence and much stronger on implied evidence like financial performance. And so you have a different mix with each one, but ultimately you end up with, a jury has to make that same decision. Did they know?
Well, with Enron, that's sort of the big kahuna, if you will, the one that started it all. Those leaders have yet to go on trial. They're expected to go on trial, I believe, next January.
That's right.
Well, so what do you expect will happen at that trial for former CEO Ken Lay? I know
a lot of people will fall asleep. I think the general world believes that Ken Lay has been indicted for his involvement in the massive fraud at Enron. And a jury is going to sit down and find out that that is, in fact, not the case against Ken Lay, that the case against Ken Lay involves only statements he made in the final 12 weeks of the company's existence, that he knew the company was in dire financial straits in the final 12 weeks when he was saying that things were looking good. At the end of the day, Lay has the benefit of low expectations, that I think a jury will be surprised that the case against him is so narrow. The person who followed up as chief executive, Jeffrey Skilling, who will be tried with Mr. Lay, is in fact indicted on charges that he was involved in the accounting machinations that have gained so much public attention.
New York Times reporter Kurt Eichenwald is the author of a book about Enron. It's called Conspiracy of Fools, A True Story. Kurt Eichenwald, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks to Day-to-Day's Madeline Brand for that interview.